Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am Ajito Ryo Master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
Tsunami Generation, and welcome to another episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. Welcome back, it is another week and yet another review, as we are only a week gone from the epic 2.5 hour review of Gundam Wing. There was a lot of labor put into that, and to be honest, there was a certain way I actually recorded that episode that I broke it up into several parts. I actually had to end up recording a lot of parts over and over again. But we'll get to that in a second. But this week we're doing what is, I feel, a sort of complimentary episode towards that episode. And that is, this week we are covering Gundam Wing Endless Waltz, with both the movie and the OVA. And I say that because they're kind of one and the same, and for the most part, if you have the DVD, you have both the OVA and the movie. Some people only have the movie, some people only have the OVA. You know, I have a DVD which, you know, has both. But like I said, I want this episode to be a sort of a complimentary episode to last week's episode, and I'll tell you why. Like I said, I kind of did things different. I recorded each part of the episode by itself, and I had a whole lot more notes, and like I really separated individual characters to something I wouldn't usually do. And kind of the reason I wanted to do that, and what I was kind of hoping to do, was I kind of wanted to show how important every character and every bit of Gundam Wing is. Like I said last week, I think Gundam Wing is the greatest animation series ever done. I also think, by far and none, it's probably one of the greatest animation franchises, or at least series of a franchise that's out there. It's definitely the best Gundam out there. And I know that's just my opinion, but I think when you compare the Gundams and actually do a comparison about the effect that they've had in culture, I think there's no contest. But in my attempt to try to, just show how important and get to a very technical aspect for Gundam Wing, I think I kind of lost my way in trying to show just how good Gundam Wing is. So I hope to sort of change that with this episode and sort of simplify and also enforce the things I was saying last episode. So with that, let's get started. And Gundam Wing Endless Waltz, the synopsis. The year is after Colony 196, and the peace that has been attained in 195 is being threatened by a colony of 1988 in the L3 colony cluster, being led by the Barton Foundation and their leader, Marimea Kushrinada, the daughter of Trace Kushrinada. They seek out to, when is in their words, obtain what her father wanted to do. So the Gundam pilots must regain their Gundams, which they had sent into the sun, or sent towards the sun, and fight back to protect the peace that they worked so hard to help the Earth attain. Our cast is Mark Hildreth as Hiro Yui, Lisa Ann Bentley as Relina Peacecraft, Brian Drummond as Zex Marquis / Wind. Scott McNeil as Duo Maxwell. Kirby Morrow as Troa Barton. Brad Swale as Catcher of Baba Winner. Ted Cole as Chang Wufei. Inuki Okuma as Lady Un. Saffron Henderson as Lucretia Noin. Samantha Ferris as Sally Poe. Kathy Westlock as Dorothy Catalonia, because Dorothy actually really only has voice roles in the movie. And Catherine Broom. And Campbell Lane as narrator. Now, there's two voices I actually didn't list off here, and that is Mama Mia and Dakin Barton, which I wasn't able to find, but from the sounds of Dakin's voice, I can pretty much tell you it's probably Michael Dobson, or at least it's somebody from the Dobson clan, as Scott McNeil has so ethically put, they're like the Osmond brothers. Just when you squish one, five more pop out of the Dobson clan. He didn't put it quite like that, but he put it quite like they were like the Opson brothers. Or Osmonds. What was I saying? Opsons. never mind. I was trying to think, what the hell was I thinking? But, that's the cast, and we're going to get right into it with my review of Gundam Wing Endless Waltz.
Words.
we're back, and we're going to start off, as we usually do, with music. Now, I actually had that intro into the review play a little bit longer, and part of the reason why was because our first talking point is we're going to talk about the movies and the OVA theme songs, which, you know, there were two different versions. And what you heard there was Last Impression, which is the one that's used for the movie, which is the first thing we're going to talk about. Now, Last Impression, I think, perfectly fits the more... and this is really the big difference between the movie and the OVAs, is the OVAs are a bit more upbeat. Both, you know, the OVAs and the movies portray sort of a more somber, sorrowful sort of remembrance type of tone with them. But the movie really embraces that theme, and you see that with Last Impression. While sort of in the sort of same hopefulness, upbeat tones that, you know, White Reflection, as we'll get to in a second, Just Communication, and Rhythmic Emotion had from Two Mix. Two Mix here kind of subdued it a bit, and it allowed it to create a more somber, not a more sorrowful tone, because, you know, there is that bit of hope, but... Which, you know, especially it builds towards that more hopefulness as the song goes on, but it's a little bit more somber. I'm trying to think of the instrument. It seems like they're definitely used to the keyboard, but sort of the strings of the keyboard to sort of imitate, I guess, the plucking sound of like a harp or a violin. You know, you have in that beginning, and that sets up that great build-up, you know. And really, that's really one of the key parts of what makes this, you know, song so great, is that sort of build-up at the beginning, you know, where you sort of, what sounds like, you know, maybe jets coming overhead, and, you know, dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun-dun, da-da-da. And, you know, you have that whole lead-up, and I think that's a key part of what makes the song work for the movie as well. You know, again, it fits more of what the movie is doing, and we'll get sort of the difference of the movie and the OVA in a second. With that being said, let's move on to our next song, which is the song that's used in the OVA, White Reflection.
We'll be right back.
And that was White Reflection that you just heard. And this song definitely is more upbeat than Last Impression. And again, like I said, it matches sort of the overall feel of the difference that is between the OVA and the movie. You know, whereas the movie sort of embraces the more somber mood, you know. The OVA is a bit more upbeat with its music, again, as we'll get to. But, you know, White Reflection, at the forefront, it's definitely more of a percussion piano leading the way. You do hear strings, you do hear trumpets. They're more in the background, and they're more enhancing what you're hearing, but it's definitely more of a percussion and piano leading the way in that track, you know. This is actually my favorite song from the Gundam Wing series. As far as, you know, what Two Mix has done, you know, this is my favorite one that they did for, you know, Gundam Wing. And you know, one of my favorite parts is actually towards the end, as you may have heard there, you know, you had that, you know, where the piano was playing sort of that piano solo at the end, you know. There's a piano playing throughout it, but sort of that more piano solo. There's two instruments I love hearing solos to songs to. Violin and pianos. So, with you having a piano solo, the only thing that would have made it better is there was a violin playing at the same time. But again, more upbeat. I think as his name sake reflects, you know, White Reflection, sort of more upbeat, more hopefulness. This song, the difference between the two songs is, whereas Last Impression is used during when Hiro gets, you know, Wing Zero Custom, and at the end of the movie, White Reflection is used pretty much three times. Basically at the end of each episode of the OVA. Both are wonderful songs, and both really help the flow and reflection of what the movie is trying to accomplish with the music, which is our next talking point, the overall feel of the music, and how it matches each, you know, system here, the movie and the OVA. The OVA is more like the series. It uses music actually in a more sort of Western European-American style, where the music is forefront, and it real just like the series does, it. And I think that's another reason why Gundam Wing as well, and this is what I'm talking about me enhancing and clarifying my views from the last week's review, you know, the more Western European sort of view about how music is used was definitely used in the Gundam Wing series, and it's used here in the OVA, where the music is loud and, you know, you can hear full front and center in certain scenes, and it really enhances the scene. It allowed the OVAs to be a little bit more upbeat. The movie took a more Japanese style, used a lot more silence, a lot more quiet, so you actually heard sound effects and that stuff. It had a bit more of a somber mood, considering what was going on through most of the movie. And it got hopeful towards the end, and, you know, for a reason, as we'll get to, you know, when we get into story. But again, Last Impression, you know, sort of matched that sort of somber mood, hopeful yet realistic, that really matched what, you know, the movie was talking about. It also matched the movie's theme of sort of letting go your past, which, you know, again, will, you know, not just the movie, it's the OVA and the movie, their theme was letting go of the past, but we'll get to that when we get to the story. I know I keep talking about that, I apologize. But both are wonderful songs, and both I love to listen to. There really isn't any other music that really pops out. Actually, a lot of the music is music that was also used in the series. So again, you know, they're recycling music that you know and that works. The only other really new song that's really in the anime that I can recall is it's really only used in two places, and it's when Duo and Hiro are trying to invade the colony of L3 1-8, 1988. And it's when the Gundam pilots come down, Catra Duo and Troa come down with their Gundams to help Zex and Noin. And they're fighting, you know, the serpent suits. You know, you have a very heroic tone, again, in the vein of when the dragon submerges and the wings of the boy who killed adolescents from last week. This is a very upbeat, heroic, again, that's why it's played at these points. Sort of showing the will and sort of the heroic deeds of the Gundam pilots, you know. No, just trying to play those notes there. You know, again, very upbeat. You know, it's a sort of battle song, one might say, that these songs are their battle themes. And it works perfectly to what they're trying to do. In the OVA, it's louder and more present than it is in the movie, where the songs are actually sort of toned down and softer in the movie itself. Because, again, they're using that more Japanese style, the more to where, rather than being sort of like mood music, you know, it enhances it a little bit, because you want the sound effects and things going on screen to really come full front and center. Now, usually I talk about this stuff during the story, but our third point is going to be the dubcast, because I actually forgot to talk about it last episode, because again, all the craziness that was going with me trying to get the last week's episode so perfect. And I do want to talk about it here and overall for the series. I love the dubcast. I love the dubcast. I think somebody who doesn't get enough respect for just how perfect of a role he did is Mark Hildreth as Hiro Yui. And I say that because really nobody understands that what he's doing is he's playing a soldier. That's what he is. He is playing a soldier, and he plays the role perfectly. I can fully believe in everything that Hiro Yui is doing and why he's doing it, because of, you know, Mark's actions and Mark's voice. Lisa Ann Bentley, again, Relina is one of those characters that gets constantly disrespected. And part of it is because I think there's a lot of fangirls who are jealous of Relina. And I think part of that comes from the fact that, you know, Lisa Ann Bentley does such a wonderful performance as Relina. You know, she gives her a sense of elegance that, you know, I've really not heard from any other anime character. I love listening to Lisa Ann Bentley work. I love listening to her lines, because the elegance and the performance that she puts into them are absolutely incredible to hear. Scott effing McNeil. Not just Scott McNeil. Scott effing McNeil. Because he is the effing man. As Duo Maxwell is. This is why I love this dubcast. Because once again, Scott McNeil is trying to steal the show. Because he's so awesome. But again, this leads to why the dubcast is so well. Because everybody in this dubcast handles their own and is able to not let him steal the show. You know, I listen to so many animations where, you know, Scott steals the show. But in here, he doesn't, because the dubcast is, you know, really able to handle their own. But, you know, in this, Scott McNeil is just Duo Maxwell. You know, you just want there to be a Duo Maxwell show. Just to see all the crazy stuff Duo does. And part of that comes from Scott McNeil lends the perfect voice, you know, as he puts it. You know, I get to be 13 again. You know, which is quite different from,
perhaps I should take you out the old-fashioned way. Brutally! Yeah, I'd like to see you try it there, Dino Boob. Or should I say, lizard lips? Oh man, we're all gonna die. No more fine, no more fine, no more fine. All this fine. It was Spinator has big headache.
And of course, Thunderbolt, big, strong, proud, and smart like a sack of hammers. I'm sorry. I got Beast Wars Season 1, 2, and 3 recently. I'm on a Scott McNeil kick. Kirby Morrow is absolutely wonderful as Troa Barton. There's a great subtlety to the voice he's giving to Troa that's absolutely perfect. Brian Drummond, it's not to say just playing a soldier for Zex, but also that sort of old warrior who's the old tiger. In seeing, the movie was made after Gundam Wing, but, in seeing it now, it's kind of like Sean Connery's character. Not that he's voicing it like Sean Connery, but, like his character in the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which, by the way, is a good movie. But you had it to where, that sort of old warrior who's sensing his end, or at least the end of his era. And you get that sort of with Brian's portrayal of Zex. And it's wonderful to hear. And it makes a perfect sort of compliment to what Mark is doing with Hero's voice. Brad Swale, God, wow, his voice range. When you listen to Catra and then you listen to sort of the other voices he does, he worked really hard on this voice and you can tell it. And he made you believe in who Catra's is. He made you believe in the kindness of Catra. Ted Cole. I've never actually gotten to meet Ted Cole. Him and Lisa Ann Bentley are like the two main Gundam Wing voice actors who I've yet to actually meet and talk to and stuff. And I just want to know what he... He must have had... voice actors have this type of fun when they get to do crazy characters like Wu Fei and sort of this... these very strict characters, and I just want to hear all the bloopers he probably had from trying to do sort of the straight face, straight and narrow Wu Fei, because he had to, but he does a wonderful job here. He makes you believe in sort of the sorrow and sort of pain that Wu Fei is going through. And then, of course, the, Inuka Okuma does a wonderful job as Lady Un. Saffron Henderson, Craig Noyne, Ferris as Poe, all do a wonderful job. Kathy Whistleoff cracks me up as Dorothy Catalonia, and maybe that also has to do with the fact that she loves gold. She loves gold, as we'll get to. But, just listening to, she brings an elegance, an elegance, and at the same time, sort of a, it's not attitude, but, it's sort of stuck-upness about her, sort of, stuffiness, that I'm better than you sort of attitude, and yet, at the same time, elegant, and it cracks me up. I'm like, this bitch is crazy! This is crazy. Oh my god. I'm like, oh no, she didn't. She didn't bring in a gold truck. She brought in a gold truck. She loves gold. Dorothy grabbed me. Oh man. But yeah, she cracks me up so much. And it very much leads to just how great this dubcast is. And again, Campbell Lane is narrator, again returning, does a wonderful job to set up each three of the OVAs, and does a great job in the movie as well. He has only a few lines, but again, he comes in at those perfect times to sort of give you the rundown of what's been happening and catches you up, no matter where you are in the story. But, this is one of the best dub casts ever, and I think it's very hard for anybody to sort of argue that. Everybody, especially once they got to the movies in the OVA, they knew what they're doing. And one of the greatest things the dubcast did when they did the movie in the OVA is they really showed, just in their voices, how much these characters have evolved and how they've grown. And that's very, very hard to do. I don't think people appreciate sometimes just how hard it is to do voice acting. They act as though, well, all you have to do is put your voice, the animation does the rest, it does body movement and all that stuff. But the fact is, you have to portray body movement. You have to portray all that stuff just with your voice. You have to do the same things that you can do with your arms and with your body posture and with acting with your entire body just with your voice. That's why when you watch voice actors in the voice booth, you know, you see, you know, them actually acting out their lines because they actually have to portray their voice in there. The best voice actors do that. So, with that being said, that's it for music. And I'll be right back with animation.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, a great adventure took place.
I'm going to regret this.
This is ridiculous.
Don't be alarmed. It's only a laser sword fight.
Star Tours announces the boarding of the Endor Express, non-stop star speeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
No! Can I get your ship
out? Lando Calrissian is a positive role model in the realm of science fiction fans.
Lando Calrissian.
Star Wars Monthly Mondays, available the first Monday of every month at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
We would be honored if you would join us.
And we're back, and as we move on to character animation, or animation in general, but you know, character designs, mech designs, all that stuff, the very first thing we're going to actually talk about is we're going to talk about change from hand-drawn to computer animation. And what I mean by that is, you know, as I may mentioned before, at the end of the series, you start to see it come along. But, you know, 96, 97, that was the year they changed from solely just working still on, you know, paper to starting to move towards putting it on computer and the assistance of computers. You know, the animation was still hand-drawn, but there was computer assistance now, which allowed for a more dynamic and sort of the more stylistic, you know, animes that we saw. All the animes like Cowboy Bebop and Outlaw Star and all that stuff that came out during that time, it was all made possible because of computer assistance for the drawing style. And so you saw that here. And so you see a much more cleaner look. More crisp, a lot more dynamic action, to the point to where you don't necessarily need to continue to reuse old scenes and different things. Not that that's a bad thing, that's sometimes genius when it's used right, but there's a lot more dynamic things that you can do now because of the computer assistance. And it is quite beautiful. It gives more bold colors that I personally like. And these are things you see with Cowboy Bebop and Outlaw Star. You know, it's the same things you'll see there. And so I think it's a perfect translation. And that's really the thing there I want to talk about, which is sort of the translation from the sort of hand-drawn style that the Gundam Wing series was to sort of the computer assistance, you know, with the movie and OVA. And I thought it was done flawlessly. You know, again, you had change of mech designs and change in character designs, but it never felt completely different. You saw things that were different, but it didn't feel different. And I think that was important in the sort of the changeover. So I very much appreciated that. Next, we're going to talk about the character designs and how they changed from the series. And pretty much the same thing that, you know, I kind of said before, I talked about how the characters evolved and matured, and really you see that, especially with the Gundam pilots, you know, with Relina. You know, they've evolved, they've matured, you know, they're 16 going on 17. Poor Relina, she didn't have her sweet 16 birthday. Oh well. Wait, did she? Never mind. I was going towards a joke, but you know, she's, they're 16, 17. You know, they mature. They've grown a little. You can see that Hiro's obviously grown a bit from the series. So has Duo and Toro and all of them. And it's, you know, portrayed in their clothing, their body posture, you know, the way they move and stuff. But they all seem a whole lot more older, not just because they, you know, had puberty and, you know, they're older, but because they've gone through a year of war. And again, something I talked about last week, you know, when I was talking about Zex and Noin and Sally and Un and Trace, is the maturity of them, even though they were supposed to be, like, in their early 20s, they had a maturity that made them seem more like they were in their 30s because of all the war they've been in. We see the same thing, especially with the Gundam pilots and Relina Peacecraft. They've been through this year of war, fighting for this peace that they've been trying to, you know, keep for the Earth and for the colonies. And it's matured them to the point to where, even though the, as we'll get to in a second, they still have sort of somewhat feminine qualities, they still look to a bit to where, like, they're maybe in their mid-20s as opposed to being teenagers. You know, when I look at Hiro Yui, I think about somebody who's, like, maybe 24, 25. And, again, that comes from the fact of, you know, war. War does that to people. War ages people. War, you know, puts wisdom on people's minds, you know, if they're smart enough to accept it. You know, especially accept the realities of the situations that they're going through. And I really love how that's portrayed in the characters. Now, at the same point in time, they still keep that sort of feminine quality that sort of help make these characters attracted to fangirls. You know, I'm just going to say it outright. You know, and this is something they did in the series, and this is, you know, the beauty of the character designs. They're strong character designs that we can all connect to, but they have a feminine quality about their character design. And what it is sort of the softness that they put in their face. You know, their faces are a bit more rounded, very youngest looking, and they still keep that, you know, sort of bit of softness in their face, even in the movie. Again, giving them a bit more of a feminine quality, at least to the face, which again, you know, that's why they get called pretty boys. So that way the character designs can appeal to everybody. It's a very simple thing to do, and yet it doesn't feel forced. It feels natural, and I think that's the important part of it, is that it feels completely natural. So I just love how these character designs, they've evolved, they've matured, and yet they've still kept sort of that boyish quality about them. And Relina, you know, she's matured the most, and she, you can fully see why Hiro would want to follow Relina just on looks. You know, the way she's matured, the way she carries herself, sort of the elegance, not just of a princess, but mind you, of an important diplomat, of somebody who's very presidential, you know, of a world leader, shall I say. You know, somebody you could understand why people cheer for her, why people, you know, follow her. And then, of course, even Un and Noin and Zex and Poe and all of them, even Dorothy, you know, all have a sense of maturity about them. They don't seem like they've aged much more, but, you know, definitely seem, you know, maybe upper 30s now. And so, again, that whole maturity aspect of, you know, what war has done to them shown here in the animation is really a joy to watch. Now we're going to move on to mech designs, and the mech designer for Gundam Wing changed, did whole new designs for the Gundams for Endless Waltz. He sort of this was to do certain things. You know, he wanted to sort of show the purity of Wing Zero, so he gave, you know, Zero angel wings, wanted to make Deathside a bit more demonic, you know, as we'll get to. So we're going to start off with Gundam Wing Zero Custom. It's actually just called Gundam Wing Zero, but, you know, it's fans have sort of given it the custom aspect of it. And this is the Gundam model kit that I have two of. Right now I have one on my bed railings right now, and then another one I think is in its box right now. But yeah, this is the Gundam Wing Zero that has the angel wings. I just love the look of this Gundam. I love the angel wings. You know, one of my favorite, you know, shots in Gundam Wing is that shot where, you know, Wing Zero, you know, activates and the wings come unfiltered, and you have that thing, especially when you have Last Impression playing in the background, and the wings are all extended, and then he, you know, the wings flap and he flies off to Earth. It's just such an amazing shot. It is beautiful. And you sort of have the transparent feathers floating around in space. It's beautiful to watch, you know. Again, it was more of an artistic choice. I mean, there weren't real feathers, but it was sort of a artistic sort of grandeur about him, about Wing Zero activating, coming back online, and going off to save the day. Really not much has changed. Again, Angel Wings, white is more the predominant color, sort of to match sort of the purity that's needed to pilot, you know, Wing Zero. Blue and yellow. Red is a little bit more subdued in this version of Wing Zero than it is in the series. Weapons remain the same, you know, Twin Buster Rifle, Vulcan guns on his shoulders, beam sabers. Posley has two. I don't know where it would... I'm guessing because they never show where he gets the beam saber from. I guess still in the shoulders. With that, we're going to move on to Deathside Hell. And the cloak has been changed a bit. I guess it just extends behind him and it doesn't, like, encompasses Deathside Hell like it does in, you know, the end of the Gundam Wing series. And the purpose of this, it's more like bat wings now. And the purpose of this is, you know, as the designer apparently said, he wanted to make Deathside more demonic, which makes sense. And it is a beautiful look. The scythe gets changed. Instead of it being a double beam scythe, it's a scythe with a much longer, curvier, sort of more demonic blade, even though it's a beam blade. Yeah, pretty much all of, with the exception of maybe heavy arms, all of these Gundams pretty much have the, you know, same weapons. But again, made to look more demonic. Red, there's some red thrown in there for good taste. It also helps that sort of demonic image. And Deathside Hell is very good to look at. I still like the Deathside Hell from the end of the series, but, you know, this is a close second. Now to what I think is probably the best redesign. It's really not that it got redesigned that much, but I love the change of colors, and I love the additions. And that's Gundam Heavy Arms Kai. I have this Gundam. It's right behind me. And, you know, come out and say it. Great choice to add basically four Gatling guns. You know, the Gatling guns, instead of it being sort of a hand itself to where there's two, it was sort of this gun, and you see the same things on the Serpent mobile suits, to where it's these two Gatling guns, and now he has four, to where he sort of, like, sits down and... God! Like, there's, like, this very primitive American cowboy part of me that's like, hell yeah! And it's just this wonderful shot of him shooting all those bullets, and then shooting all the missiles. It's awesome to look at. I also love the change to green. I think it matches Troa's personality, personally. So I love the change to green in that aspect. You have Gundam Shinrock Kai. Again, another color scheme from black and yellow and white to black, white, and purple, and red is thrown in there. Actually, I didn't like that. It doesn't feel out of place, but it doesn't have me any which way, and so I really don't know what I have to say about the change in the color scheme, but again, really does keep the same, look of Shinrock. I love, though, the cape, when he first appears and it pops off, and sort of, I love that sort of very mysterious look that it adds to Shinrock. And then Ultron's pretty much the same. Pretty much the same design and everything from the original series. Or at least from the end of the series. Same color scheme, same everything. Maybe as I peek over to look at him, I think there's some red taken off his color scheme. But again, same weapons. Double beam trident, dragon fangs. I love how they use his dragon fangs in, the movie and OVA. It creates some very dynamic fight scenes, as we'll get to in a second. Then we have Tall Geese 3. Now, Tall Geese 3, it keeps the same color scheme as Tall Geese 2, the white and the blue. Again, the head design is different. There's sort of a almost like a crown, one would say, look to it. It's sort of 3 points. I love how this sort of combines the two versions of Tall Geese, also with some bits of Gundam Epion, because it has that shield that also extends a heat rod, very much like what Epion had. But at the same time, it feels like, a more of a upgraded version of Tall Geese. I absolutely enjoy it. I actually have to try to find Tall Geese. The bottle kits that I'm left to try to find are Shinrock and Tall Geese, so yeah. The last mobile suit that we have to talk about is the Serpent mobile suit, and I love how, and we kind of learned this in the story, I love how it's sort of a play off Heavy Arms, considering that, Heavy Arms was supposed to be the leader because it was being piloted by the original Troa Barton, which was the original son of the original leader, or of Dacom, mind you. And so I kind of like how the certain mobile suits are really much based off, sort of the Heavy Arms design. Very bulky, uses the Gatling guns, has missiles and everything, and very streamlined, very much for destruction and barrage. And then you have all the other little crafts, and you have Noin's spacecraft, and I love that shot of her releasing the, missile pods, and then the missiles firing. That's a very, very beautiful sight to behold. Now, let's talk about the fight scenes, and, I love the mobile suit fight scenes. Just everything you want in a Gundam battle, and pretty much, from the first one that you have with Duo and Hiro trying to invade the colony, fighting with the Leos, to, Zex first appearing, to Hiro and Wufei's fight in space, to, the battle around the Brussels Presidential Palace. Everything shows off just why these pilots are good. And another thing about the fight is that it also shows you how far they've come. They are veterans in battle. They're not just rookies. They're ace pilots. They're veterans. They know what they're doing. And the ability, not just for these great fights with just wonderful animations, but also for the fact that they're doing it while they're not killing anybody. It really, shows you just how far, it's a story element of, through the animation, are showing you how far these characters have come in their piloting. But, from, the shot of Duo, in the moon coming down and crashing and destroying some serpent suits, to, Troa, doing his maneuver that, you know, they show several times him doing, and you're showing him doing with heavy arms, where he jumped, twirled, lands perfectly set, and it just starts firing. It's an awesome shot. But yeah, I love that fight between Wu Fei and Hidro. It tells, the fight itself tells the story about what's going on without the need of Hidro or Wu Fei saying everything. You feel the emotion between the two characters really flowing through that fight. And like I said, the fight choreography is just perfect. There's really no other way to say it. It's perfect. Yeah, it's things like that that make me wish for more Gundam. I think it's what makes everybody wish for more Gundam, is that they're not too wild. They have fantastic moves within the fight, but they're not too wild. The maneuvers are things that are very realistic and understandable and very plausible to, you know, people who are watching it. So I'm going to move on to backgrounds now, and again, computer assistance. Same things with the animation overall through the series. And one of the things that really gets helped is the backgrounds. And again, part of it is giving it bolder colors. Again, giving the depth to, or depth, to, excuse me, to death. That's a comic book I haven't read yet. But giving depth to, you know, the colonies, to the backgrounds, to everything that's going on. Nothing feels like it's just a painted-on background. Everything pops out perfectly. Everything feels like an actual place that you could reach out and touch. And I love that about the backgrounds. The backgrounds I just find are absolutely beautiful, especially towards the end of the series when you have the snow falling and everything. And overall, that's it for animation. So I'm going to give you, as a, you probably heard last break, I played a commercial for you. So I'm going to play another commercial for another podcast, and we'll be right back with story.
Hey, everyone. My name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast. Presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986
and Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
And we're back, and now we go into story. And first part we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about the overall theme of Endless Waltz. How it continues and finalizes the theme for the series. And I say that because it really is two core themes going through the movie and the OVA of Endless Waltz. And that is, it is continuing a sort of look upon pacifism and sort of force, as we saw in the series. But at the same time, it finalizes, really what's needed is a combination of two. People want peace and they want pacifism and they don't want to use weapons, but there is a need to defend themselves. It doesn't necessarily mean that you need weapons to defend yourself. It needs people with a strong heart willing to stand up for what they believe in and willing to defend the peace that they cherish so much. At the same point in time, another theme that, is very core, and we see this because of the flashbacks and everything is you letting go of the past, letting go of revenge, which is a core thing that leads to sort of the idea and the use of force being needed. By letting go of the past, by letting bygones be bygones, by letting, revenge go, as Relina did with Lady Un at the end of the series, you're able to accept and understand and, embrace, peace. And really, that's what these pilots are doing. They're letting go of their past. They're letting go of the idea that they need the Gundams because they thought in the past they needed the Gundam to be somebody. But they now understand that with this peace, they don't need the Gundams to be able to help obtain the peace. That's why they showed the Gundams not killing anybody, because if they did, it would eliminate the whole reason to what they were trying to show. That they were trying to show that they didn't need the Gundams. That the Gundams were only a tool to trying to help defend themselves. That's why they didn't kill anybody. That was the message that they were trying to send. And even though it would probably lose them the battle, it was showing a symbol. That symbol got directly connected to the people, and that's why they came at the end and started to realize they needed to stand up for themselves. So that theme of letting go of the past is very, affluent. Again, Hiro, when you see the flashback of him, accidentally killing the girl and her dog, and how he's held on to that, and how the finality of, what happens in Endless Waltz allows him to finally sit there and say, I don't have to kill anybody again. I don't have to, kill that little girl and her dog again. That's him letting go of his past mistakes, letting his emotions, not overtake him. And, because as I talked about before with Hiro, he lives by his emotions. And that is prime by the example of, what we saw there. His emotions have held this regret of him accidentally killing that person. And now he can let go of his emotions. He can, even though he already fully embraces his emotions and, lives by them, he can let go of the harder part of the emotions, let go of the harder things that are harder to let go, and, let go of the past. Again, going with the theme of what we see with Endless Waltz. This is a perfect segue, mind you, into what our second talking point is, which is how the Gundam pilots have evolved. You see how Catra has embraced his kindness and understand that it is how his kindness is a tribute to him and not a liability. You see Duo, Duo doesn't change that much, but he was already embracing sort of his soul of the colony, because really that's what Duo was. He was sort of the soul of, of the colonies. And you see him embrace it even more here. You see Troa embrace the idea of having a home to come to and letting go of his past, because, as you see with the flashbacks, he only saw himself as somebody who was best suited for the battlefields, Now he has a home to go to. He doesn't need to be that. So you see him embrace that. And of course, you see Wu Fei embrace the fact that he's not needed anymore. You know, for the longest time, he was a strong, sensible warrior about justice. You know, that's why he couldn't believe, you know, Trey's was gone. I kind of attributed as I was watching it, actually, to something Batman said in Batman Forever, you know, where Chris O'Donnell's character is, you know, becoming Robin. He's like, I'm gonna be Robin. And, you know, Val Kilmer's saying, like, this is what's gonna happen. You're gonna go into the night and you're going to kill Two-Face. But the pain won't stop there. So you're gonna go off into the night again and again and again to look for another and another. You see that sort of same thing starting to form with Wu Fei. He has, you know, killed Trace, who was the main source of conflict in the Earth and the colonies. But, you know, he felt as though Earth not changed. You know, that anger inside of him to want to revolt, to want to get justice, it didn't die. And so he had this sense that Earth did not change and that pacifism wasn't changing anything, which led to him aligning with Maimea and Dagon Barton. And it took Hiro to find, you know, to open his eyes to, like, you know, our time has gone. We must, you know, prevent more soldiers from being needed. Because if we don't, you know, miserable battles will return and continue. And, you know, Hiro helping him seeing the people stand up for himself, helped him realize that he's gotten justice and, you know, he's not needed. He can rest now. You know, but at the same time, you know, I kind of like, you know, how Sally Poe, like, you know, come help me, you know, putting his skills to good work. But, you know, he is definitely, I think, the prime example of the core theme of, you know, letting the past go, shown to work in the soldiers who felt like they were being, you know, used. And again, and that's one of the things about, you know, also going back to the first point, you know, talking about, you know, letting things go. All the people that were working for Maimea, more importantly for Dacom, because Maimea was his puppet, again, they were working because they were soldiers of Trey's, you know, of his excellency. And they had such high esteem for him, they couldn't believe he was gone. And when they heard his daughter was, you know, basically, Dacom used his daughter to gain these people to work for him and to fight for him because they thought they were carrying out his excellency's, you know, beliefs. And once Dacom murdered that, you know, it changed just like that. And I thought that was something beautiful within the story of just, you know, how much effect Maimea actually had over these soldiers who were, again, not letting go of their past. They were embracing the past of his excellency so much that it led them to doing these things which were hurting the Earth. But yeah, Gundam Pilots Evolved, and of course, you know, third point, how the other characters evolved. I like how, by the way, Zax, you know, remains a warrior, and I love how the fact that he, even though they're calling him Zax and that stuff, he says, no, I need a new name, I need Wind. And part of the reason for that is, yes, he's been Zex, he's been Millardo, and now he's Wind. But, you know, Millardo and Zex are dead. You know, he is the Wind. And I love how that's sort of representative of his evolution to understanding, you know, I'm a warrior. I'm going to go to where I'm needed to help keep the peace. I love the Preventers, you know, because Preventers perfectly show how Sally and Noin and Un have evolved into accepting the responsibility into helping keep the peace that the pilots helped attain. And then Relina, you know, Relina changing her name back to Darlin was a perfect example. You know, she believes in her natural father, the Peacecraft's way of pacifism, but because she's come to understand, you know, as she says, I'm running away, you know, she's come to understand that, you know, everybody wants peace, but peace cannot be attained by people just sitting back and letting things happen just for the sake of, you know, an idea. There has to be people that are willing to stand up and embrace what peace really means and willing to fight for it. That doesn't, again, it doesn't mean the need for weapons, but people willing to stand up. That's why, so as Un said, that's why so many people love the Gundams. That's why so many people did fall in love with Trace. His ability to, in the face of adversaries and that losing battle, sort of the symbol, to stand defiant against them, to protect the peace, to protect the people, you know, was endeared in the hearts of people. And so you saw that change with her character, her moving to Darlin, and her evolution, and her, you know, growth through the series. Moving on, next point I'm going to talk about is a bit fanboys, and that is, I'm going to talk about the progression of Hiro and Relina's relationship through the series, and moving in OVA, it's fanboys, but again, this is another one of those things that really endears you to both the character of Hiro and Relina, is this sort of relationship with each other. And to see it evolve in this movie, sort of, you know, him saying, you know, and again, it's hard because it is something that's also sort of verified through the different mangas out there, from the Endless Waltz manga itself to mangas like The Blind Target. But, you know, how they need each other and how they're always there for each other, that's something that Endless Waltz really shows endearingly, you know, how Hiro will always be there for Relina. And part of it, it's not just because, you know, she's so important, you know, to the world because, you know, she's such a great leader, but also because of his feelings for her. You know, he has feelings and does embrace them, but he also knows that, you know, he can't be there necessarily in more of the traditional sense because of maybe his enemies and that stuff. You know, it's a natural understanding that you have of being his in his line of work. He's going to have enemies and him wanting to stay away. But the fact that he's, the lengths he'll go through to always be there for her and always save her is really a beautiful thing to watch. And I know this is really more of a fanboy. It's maybe more of a point I want to see. But I do think that, you know, part of sort of the popularity of Gundam Wing is the different relationships that form. And sort of the connection of, like, okay, who's with who? Well, Catcher's going to be with Dorothy, which, by the way, that is, like, the most hilarious pairing ever. you know, duo with Hildy. You know, there's a joke glyph a friend of mine has on a Gundam Wing Hiro and Relina pairing site that, you know, first anime fan site that I went to and still am a part of, mind you. But this person has a glyph to where, you know, the movie ending of, you know, duo, as we'll get to in a second, you know, where he's eating at the cafe, and she has it to where when Hildy opens his mouth, the words, "Duo, I'm pregnant," and then he chokes, which is hilarious, but we'll get to that. Again, you know, Poe with Buffet, which, Chinese, da-da-da-da. But, you know, we do, because we come to care about these characters, and because, you know, we connect with these characters and their different attributes, you know, it's natural for us to sort of pair them off and, you know, care about their relationships with each other. It just brings us further into this anime that we love so much. And, again, here, sort of the classicness and sort of the traditionalness of the sort of relationship of sort of the soldier and, you know, princess/world leader relationship of Hiro and Relina, and how they, you know, work off each other, how they influence each other and, you know, help evolve each other, you know, is a wonderful thing to see. From, I know that, again, it's going to more of a personal view of mine. It's not something necessarily need to important. And it really doesn't take away just how good this series is, but I do think that it adds another flavor, another addition of excellent storytelling to this series. Moving on to the last point, the Endless Waltz actually has multiple endings, and I kind of wanted to talk about this because you had the movie endings, you have the OVA endings, and then you have the manga endings. And I say that because, you know, and while most of them are saying, you know, Duo's in the OVA, he's in a junkyard, but again, in the movie, he sells a part, goes to a cafe where he meets Hildy, and he, for some reason, starts choking. your song is playing overhead the ending, so you're not hearing what they're saying. In the OVA, Troa gets back to the circus, and the movie, him and Kathleen are actually performing. In the OVA, Troa is, you know, meeting up with the rest of the Aquanaut Corps, who he, you know, left when he went over to the research disposable satellite. In the movie, he's with the Aquanaut Corps. It's apparently they're building something in the colony. In the OVA for Wufei, he's typing something. Him and Sally are in space. In the movie, him and Sally are apparently destroying a secret, like, Oz base in the desert. And then, of course, you have Hiro's... actually, one second. As I get up from my space here and I pull out my Gundam Wing Endless Waltz manga... as I pull out, because I just want to verify what the endings are. Of course, the endings for Zex and Noin are pretty much the same. They're going off to Mars. Lucky for them. I mean, they're very similar. You know, on with my Maya at Trace's grave. Duo's in a junkyard. Troll, Kathleen in a circus. Catra's apparently typing something. So on, so on. But, you know, for Hiro, the most difference comes between Hiro and Relina's endings. And that is, spoiler alert, by the way, well, I don't know why I should even, I don't even know why I said that, that's ridiculous. But anyways, in the movie, you see, you know, Relina at a peace conference, apparently in front of the White House, and Hiro's on some colony at a crosswalk. That looks very like Shinjuku's crosswalk. And in the OVA, Hiro is overlooking Relina giving a speech, and then you see him walking credits. You know, he disappears at the end, and then you see him walking along credits. In the Endless Waltz manga, as I look at mine, which, by the way, is... can't remember if I actually had it signed by Scott McNeil or Mark Hildreth. I think that's Scott. No, that's Mark Hildreth. I'm sorry. boy. I apologize, Mark. as I quickly flip through, you know, I'm stalling for time, folks. You know, his ending, you know, Hiro, again, you know, Relina's giving the speech in the Mars terraforming project, and Hiro's actually has a bodyguard. He's actually, instead of being in a balcony, he's on, like, off stage, and he's watching her, and he's in bodyguard garb. that's a shame. Bodyguard garb. Try saying that five times fast, because I can't say it once. Bodyguard garb. But actually, the last panel is actually him and Relina, you know, he's sort of in street clothes, but standing together. I bring this up because the writers have actually said that when it comes to Hiro and Relina, the manga ending is actually the real ending for them, at least at that point in the story. And I say that because this is how popular Gundam Wing is. Gundam Wing is so popular that in 2010, they actually sort of restarted up the storyline in what's known as Operation Teardrop. It's a manga that comes out in Gundam Ace. And, you know, apparently there's, I think, three or four volumes out so far, or at least three or four stories. I can't say if there's an actual volumes, but, you know, it takes place in the future. Dorothy Catalonia, God help us, is apparently the president of the Earth Sphere. God help us all. She's like the George W. I apologize. But, you know, apparently it does center around somebody trying to assassinate Relina, and actually centers around Sally Poe's daughter. And pretty much the only thing we know about relationships is that Duo and Hildy had a child, because Duo's son is also pregnant in it as well. And Duo apparently has become a priest. Wow. But I want to bring that up because I think that's also a very interesting part. Because again, Gundam Wing does have this thing about having sort of that obligatory ending to where it allows you to make up your own mind about what happens in the series. And it's that same sort of obligatory sort of approach that allows there to be people like the young woman who apparently, for a thesis paper for her college exams, you know, and her degree, wrote a 20-page paper on why Hiro and Relina would never get together. I can't make this up. But I think it just shows you just sort of the importance of this series and just how well the story above, you know, the movies and the series when put together, how much people care about this series. Overall, when it, you know, Gundam Wing Endless Waltz is actually a great movie. It's great to watch on its own, and yet it's also great to watch after watching the series because it really enhances what the series was talking about. Overall, you know, Gundam Wing, like I said, Gundam Wing, it's for these reasons that I think Gundam Wing is one of the best franchises out there. Or at least it makes Gundam one of the best franchises, and it's definitely the best series of the franchise, and one of the best anime series out there. It's in the echelon, as far as I'm concerned, that's right up there with the Animaniacs, Batman the Animated Series, and some others, you know, of like the greatest animation series of all time. And again, for good reason. Gundam Wing is really the main culprit responsible for anime being to where it went to, and to an extent where it is today. You know, and I know there's a lot of bad things, you know, especially with Bandai leaving, which I'm actually going to have something released on that next week. We're actually running a little long. But, you know, again, anime wouldn't become as big as it did in 2004 if it wasn't for Gundam Wing. That's where a lot of fans started to come from. That's where a lot of the popularity, you know, bit started by Dragon Ball Z and Sailor Moon and Pokemon. That's where people really started to embrace anime because of Gundam Wing. And it was because of the story, because of the great animation, because of the great music. So Gundam Wing Endless Waltz, 5 out of 5. 10 out of 10. This goes up to 11. But this only goes up to 10. But it goes up to 11. I probably screwed up that quote. But, you know, it's perfection. It's not perfect. There are flaws about, you know, the series and the movies. But at the same point in time, the flaws are so insignificant compared to just how great everything else is that it is perfection. So, Gundam Wing Endless Waltz, that's been my two-week massive review, if you put them all together, of the Gundam Wing universe. At least as far as the series and the movies. Maybe next year I'll start it off and I'll cover all the mangas. But, you know, I very much enjoy doing this. Again, I just enjoy watching Gundam Wing in general, but getting to watch it, hopefully I've brought some of you around to, you know, why you should love Gundam Wing. Because there's so much great about this series. So, that's it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Remember that you can leave comments to the show by email at absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution132@yahoo.com. You can comment on by leaving posts. Hopefully by the end of this week, I will have the iTunes page up, and so you'll be able to download episodes on iTunes. You can also follow me on Twitter at Mattis Leonhardt. So go to Twitter at Mattis Leonhardt. That's MattisLeonhardt. So you can leave me comments and stuff about what's going on with the show there. Remember, check out all the other stuff on the Absolution Network, like the Otaku Momentum, and hopefully soon a new episode of Mice and Giant Robots. Remember to check out all our friends on the sidebar, which also includes our other shows, Tokyo SOS, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And Comic Book Crazy, which has a new episode of Hexcast up, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, our friends, as I said before, like Michael Billy's Views in the Lone Box and From Crisis to Crisis, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawl Space, the Major Spoilers Podcast, and all our others. And next week we're going to cover another controversial show. Not controversial in the fact that it shows fan service or anything, but in the fact of a show that was my pick for 2010's Anime of the Year. And like Gundam Wing, gets a lot of unnecessarily disrespect. What anime am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about only the most awesome new superhero to appear on the block. I'm talking about Stan Lee's Hero Man. So until next week, my Toonami faithful, stay golden.
A cursed samurai. You have succeeded again in eluding my effort. But I am not worried. For one day you will fail.
Clark Nova, don't sleep on it.